I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning at the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, Tom Bettis with you. We are taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. Next listener, Tom, says some of their leaves on their peach tree are turning yellow and dropping. They've lost about 10% of the leaves so far. They know that the tree's in the wrong place in the lawn. They get that. And they do treat for borers regularly. Is it possible that this is a symptom of underwatering, or could it be something else?
Well, it sounds like underwatering and drought stress, but it also could be overwatering, because symptoms of under and overwatering look so similar. Mm. And so if you're losing leaves, a lot of times that is chronic drought stress. And so if they've cut back on water for their lawn, the trees oftentimes suffer, and we need to get a hose out and put a hose and sprinkler under the tree once a week or every other week to supplement water. And so if they're on water restrictions, that's most likely what it is.
All right. How would they know if they were overwatering?
Get a piece of rebar from local hardware store or box store. And if they can, bend it at a 90-degree angle, almost like they have a 4-inch handle on the end of it, and just shove it into the ground. A long screwdriver would do the same if they had one that was 18 inches long. But if you want that screwdriver to go into the ground a good 6 inches to a foot, and that's after you irrigate. And so if that soil is dry, then they're going to need to increase. But if that screwdriver goes in clear to the handle really easily, they may need to back off.
Okay. Next person would like to know if bill bugs can be treated this time of year in the lawn.
Sort of, maybe, kind of, maybe,
don't like
probably.
That answer. No.
Well, they turn into adults. And so in late July into early August, they go dormant. And they form a pupa, kind of like the butterflies, except for it's evil. Mm-hmm. And because they're bill bugs. And then they emerge as adults in late summer to early fall. And so the adults do far less damage, but they will feed on individual grass blades. They're a snout-nosed beetle that works their way down a grass blade. And so if you find adults, you could use a liquid lawn spray, and it would knock a lot of them out. But it's because controlling the adults is harder, they may get some benefit, but it wouldn't be as beneficial as putting down the preventative in May of next year.
Okay, next listener says they have tons of pumpkin blossoms, but no pumpkins. What did they do wrong?
They could have done everything
late,
correctly,
maybe?
And the heat prevented the blossoms from forming. There's a lot of things that could have gone wrong. Too much water and fertilizer sometimes will do that, sometimes pests. And so if it's happening to all the pumpkins, it's usually environmental. And the first thing that comes to mind with Salt Lake City getting, was it 25 days over 100 this year?
I think we hit 26.
26. Mm-hmm. And we may get 27 next week. That would be the primary cause.
I was going to say, I saw a pumpkin vine the other day, and the vine itself didn't look very good. Like, the leaves were starting to kind of turn yellow. But the pumpkins were good sized and not ripe yet, but looked good. Is that normal for the vine to start looking kind of scraggly?
We're getting cooler in the evenings. I know down in southern Utah County that there are days we're going to be in the high 50s and low 60s. Cache Valley areas are in the 50s. And that's when powdery mildew starts to set in. When we, you know, I've walked on the lawn in the morning and bare feet and it's wet. And so that's the temperature and the conditions that will induce powdery mildew. And so a lot of times on pumpkins and squash in September, you will start to see powdery mildew. And if you can get your squash into the second week of September and they get powdery mildew, then it's fine. You know, even now, I don't know if I would spend a lot of money treating it, because a lot of those pumpkins, even though they're green, will still off the vine develop the orange color, especially if you can get ones that have just a hint of yellow or orange. If you pull those off and put them in an area that is around 70 degrees, they will develop orange color over a period of 3 or 4 weeks.
So don't give up on the pumpkins.
Don't give
up. That's the point. Okay, let's go to our phone lines. Nathan is waiting patiently. Nathan, good morning. What is your question?
So I have a plum tree that has gamosis. And so I shaved some of the bark off to try and get rid of it. And it ended up being way worse than I thought. I've probably shaved off about a sixth of the bark around the tree and found layers of dark wood underneath. Anyway, I'm wondering how much I can shave off the tree before it causes more damage than the gamosis.
Well, you want 50% of the bark still intact. And when you do that, you may want to pull off the fruit the next year so that the tree has an opportunity to recover.
Yeah. So I got good margins on one side, so there's just very little sap coming and it's clear. The other side, it's a dark amber color. So I guess that means that side, I didn't
well,
get all the good.
Well, if the mulches. Underneath the bark is black or dark brown, that side of there is Pseudomonas or Cytospora. And it's good that you cut it out. And what I would do is maybe treat those areas with like a 10% bleach solution or rubbing alcohol and just spray them to make sure that everything's cleaned up once you've done what you can do. And then this winter, I would hit a local farm store or garden center. You've got Valley Nursery and I think Dallas Greens and J&J close, and get some tree tape. It's just a white fabric tape. And I would wrap that trunk up. And because a lot of times that Pseudomonas is brought on by winter injury from the sun and the bark.
Yeah, there was no external damage except one spot where it had a big glob of sap. And so, but yeah, I'll try that.
Or wrapping. You could try painting the bark with water-based latex paint diluted one-to-one with water and just avoid painting where you cut off on the bare wood white.
So should I continue shaving some more off since
there's more infection, yes. As long as you're finding that. Now, if it's the stone fruits sometimes just have a tendency to get gamosis and there's nothing wrong. And so if it's black underneath or dark brown, then I would cut that out. But if it's healthy underneath, I wouldn't.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says, what is a good compost to put in their raised gardens? Is it good compost? Is it good to compost during the winter and prep for spring planting, or put it in prior to planting in the spring?
This will be a topic for an upcoming show, but it's a great time. When you finish gardening in September and October, that is the best time of the entire year to put compost in. And as long as it's compost, you don't need to buy fancy compost. You know, we don't need the Madagascar elephant dung compost because it all breaks down in the same components. And so I would just find something affordable. If it's a little salty, you know, you don't want to put that in there intentionally, but sometimes composts are, especially if they have manures in them, it has all winter for those salts to leach out. And so there's just no better time to do compost than in the fall.
In fact, we did a greenhouse video on this way back when, but you can find it on the KSL greenhouse videos if you'd like to check that out as well. We were out at Replenish and talked about all the different kinds of compost and mulches, and yeah, that's a good one to check out. Next person says they live in Draper and wonder if fall is a good time to plant the black lace elderberry bushes.
It's fine. Trees and shrubs, the best time to plant them is in the fall because they will actually root out a little bit. They can go dormant naturally with the climate and then break dormancy in the spring with the climate. And they're just better adjusted to our dry, hot temperatures when they're fall planted.
Okay. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Blaine, you will be first up. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you, taking your calls 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions 57500. Blaine is on the line from Kaysville. And good morning, Blaine. What is your question?
I have a question about, two questions actually. First question is, I have a question about my tomato plants that, and it's been going on for years in one certain spot every time I planted a plant right there, and they get about the same amount of water, and it happens every year. That plant would get curly leaves on it. My dad used to come over and say, oh, you got curly top, and I learned the term verticillium wilt, and nobody else knew it, so I kind of threw that out of just to sound important. I have no idea what that is, but I said it anyway. Now it seems to be spreading to other plants. My tomatoes look horrible, except for my cherry tomatoes. Any ideas?
You could have all sorts of things going on. This year has been like the tomato apocalypse. We've had a number of diseases, including curly top, come through. And I know of people that have lost all of their tomatoes. You know, even people that have been relatively successful have lost even a third of them. So I can't really pinpoint one particular disease, but you name it and we've seen it this year. And it's probably due to the strange spring weather we had, to where we were getting hot and then down into the low 20s or high teens and then hot again. That happened two or three times. And then we got a couple of weeks of rain, which also wasn't great. And so between all that, it just has not been a good tomato year.
But it happens every year in this one spot for sure.
Well, you need a new tomato patch, I think. If you're planting in the same spot, it's not.
And I don't have a ability to do that. Is there some other crop I can plant in there for a couple of years?
Yeah, you could rotate into what do you like to eat would be my question. You know, green beans.
I don't like to.
Go ahead.
I'm not much of a gardener. Actually, the only thing I've ever wanted to grow was tomatoes. I heard you mention Austrian field peas the other day. Would that do anything in there?
It would add some organic matter, but it wouldn't reduce the disease load in the soil. And so you might try getting some big containers, like volume of around 15 gallons, and you could plant some tomatoes into those for a few years and then start back into your other patch. But if you don't break that cycle of planting there every year, it'll be over time, you will not be able to plant tomatoes there for 20 or 30 years.
Would peppers or some kind of...
Nope, they're too closely related. So peppers, eggplants, potatoes, tomatoes are all very closely related.
Huh. Okay, thanks. One other question. I want to plant some trees in front of my house, and it's not a big area, to provide some shade because I get so much solar gain. And so I'd like them to be quite upright shade trees that don't get real big. What would you recommend?
There's some columnar zelkovas that are nice, columnar oaks that are really nice also. There's actually a number, columnar zelkova, Z-E-L-K-O-V-A.
Oh, yeah, what is it? Okay. I have two out there right now that are pears, and I don't like them. They're starting to get brittle. I don't know if pears, they're flowering pears, not regular pears. Do they, at about 20 years, are they not a good tree?
If they're Bradfords, they'll fall apart, and they're just disappointing trees after that point. And so if you're already starting to get branch breakage, it may be time to replace them and put some other trees in that are not pears.
And those two trees that you just mentioned, the oak, would those be real slow growing?
Moderately fast growing. They'll grow 18 inches a year. If you're wanting a smaller oak, Kindred Spirit is one that only gets 20, 25 tall and about 4 or 5 wide, and it will tolerate moderate trimming.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Blaine, for your call this morning. Next listener, Tom, says last few years their peaches ripen hundreds of little black flying beetles. About an eighth inch long, appear all over the peaches, and they're mostly inside the peaches by the pits, but they're also going inside and blemishing the peaches. They've noticed that they're also on their blackberries, and how do they get rid of them, basically?
Sap beetles.
Sap beetles.
They like to feed on very ripe fruit, and so they may need to try maybe some neem oil, but a lot of times those sap beetles will show up if the fruit is too ripe. Mm-hmm. It may not be rotten, but once you get it past a certain point, those sap beetles show up and really start to feed, and it's not necessarily the damage is so bad that you maybe can't harvest. They get on corn, they'll get on peaches, apples.
And so what do we
anything,
do about those?
Spray. And it's going to be important to do this before you harvest. And so on fruit trees, even if you're treating them organically, you can get a good spray program that will prevent most of those from getting in there. And as soon as you see that whatever it is ripe, you need to get it picked. And so if you delay a few days or you get overwhelmed, that's when you build that sap beetle population to a point that it's becomes a real problem.
So for this year, pick those peaches as soon as you can. And for
yes.
next year,
implement
start a program.
A good spray program. You can do it organically and do it very effectively.
Okay. Next listener says they want to know a little bit more about crepe myrtle. They're looking to plant it near the foundation on their east side. Is that a good spot? Also, when would be the best time to plant?
Well, if you want crepe myrtle, I would move to St. George. I see crepe myrtle
aggressive.
Around, and it looks ratty. It's not hardy in northern Utah, and so people either treat it as a perennial, and they'll cut it back and just let it resprout. It forms like a 4 or 5 foot high bush, and it flowers. And the few trees that I've seen, have just tons of dieback in them. And so it's kind of cool to say, I've got a crepe myrtle, but it looks like it's been through a tornado. And so I don't know. I just am torn on it. If you're growing it to say you have crepe myrtle and as a hobby, it's different because it'll never look like what it does in the southeast or even St. George.
Just don't have that same climate.
No. And I'm kind of being blunt here, but that's the reality of it.
Okay. Next listener says they forgot to prune their roses this year and they didn't get any full roses this year. Is it because they didn't prune? Or what's the best practices with roses and when?
I can't really say. There's too many things that can go wrong. And so I'd need to know if they have insect problems.
I think if my roses were abundant this year.
Heat would slow them down.
Yeah, my roses were not abundant this year, that's for sure.
They'll bloom a lot more in the spring and fall when we're below 90. But not pruning them back, all that would have done is just made them a little bit bigger. And they still should have bloomed normally.
Okay, has nothing to do with the pruning practice. And the best time to prune roses?
Mid-March
for
the Wasatch Front.
Trent is wondering how well an oak tree will grow in Hooper.
It'll do fine. You know, West Hooper can get, say it correctly, Hooper, not Hooper. I'm from the area.
Hits me almost all the time.
Yeah, so farther west, I would probably look at an English oak or a bur oak because they tolerate slightly saltier soils if they're toward the lake. But they should do fine. I would stay away from red oak.
Okay. And we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold.
Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.